Okay, here we are. Biological systems are rich sources for soft condensed matter physics because actually they're built out of soft condensed matter materials. And so I'm going to focus on growth of rod-like bacteria, E. coli. The basic question is, how do bacteria grow longer and not wider? You can see a statistically significant sampling of this. This is work that I've done with Ben Levitan, a very bright undergraduate student who's now gone off to do quantum theory, and Swadin Tanija, a postdoctoral fellow who I recruited from nuclear physics theory down at Brookhaven. So it goes both ways. And the basic answer of the question of how they grow longer and not wider, I'll give to you in the beginning. I should just remind you, if you don't know about bacteria, you know, they outnumber the cells in your body. They're about a micron in scale. They're packed with about 1 million protein molecules, which do most of the work, and they work really well. They'll be around for a long time. Okay, so we know basically how it works, and how it works, how they grow longer and not wider, despite only having 1 million molecules to do it with, is they insert material in hoops. Okay, and this has been, so here's the cartoon picture. So peptidoglycan is the pressure sheath. They keep in the million molecules, they keep in the 1 to 10 atmospheres of Turgor pressure, osmotic pressure inside the cell. And the stiff glycan chains are circumferential around the bacteria. They're cross-linked with each other with peptide cross-links. And this is the, sort of the largest natural molecule. And so you can grow longer and not wider if you put in a hoop at a time. Now, one problem with putting in, and this is recent studies, three separate studies in three separate systems, gram-negative and gram-positive bacteria, different species of bacteria, where they decorated, and this is an associated protein with the growth process, and they found this circumferential, a little bit of other stuff going on, but basically this circumferential insertion. So one problem is that you can break this up and actually run it through a gel and look at the length distribution, and the length distribution isn't 2 pi r. It's not big hoops going around like you'd imagine with a barrel. It's actually pretty short and pretty dispersed. Now, this is pretty evident going back into the 1970s, where you could take this pressure sheet, this sacculus around the bacteria, and look at it under EM, under, you know, various nasty conditions, and, you know, without breaking many of those bonds, you still get a very, under the preparation conditions, you still get a fairly disordered system that you see. More recently, people do the, you know, see the same thing under atomic force microscopy in a hydrated system, and you can see that the peptidoglycan surface, whatever it is, it's not homogeneous. Right? So, you know, and there's a few other lines of evidence. There's no evidence that there's any good order that you could template and copy a nice 2 pi r circumferential glycan strand to make a bacteria grow longer. Okay, so this was the model, you know, they had this dream that there was just a little machinery which would copy a strand and make it go longer and copy a strand and make it go longer because it would work. It was a conceptual model that would work, but they never found the machine, and there's no evidence of local order. Okay, so right now, so far as I know, apart from the work that I'll tell you about, maybe straightforward work, but apart from this, there's no hypothesis for what's driving that circumferential motion. Okay, so going back, this is how the growth works. It's inserted in hoops, but no one knows why it goes around. Why does it go around? Why doesn't it go in some other direction? For it to grow longer, it has to go around. For the evidence that these cells are uniformly growing longer in normal conditions, it is reliably going around. And there's not really a mechanism for that. Okay, so I'm going to tell you about a mechanism. And the inspiration for the mechanism came from looking at, well, depending on whether you're a carnivore or not. So let's say the anti-carnivores, would be the rupture of a propane tank. And the rupture of a propane tank always leads to splits longitudinally along the tank. And if you're a carnivore, if you cook with an unruptured tank, the hot dog will split lengthwise, right? And that's the origin of that is basic geometry and internal pressure, that the line tension generated by internal pressure is twice as big for hypothetical cuts along the cylinder than around, and that basic asymmetry ratio in the applied stresses inside the material means that it's always going to fail. A factor of two is big enough, it's always going to fail lengthwise. And that's a fundamental parameter of this geometry, and this is basically the geometry of the bacteria. Okay. Now, if you take bacteria and you kick the hell out of them, you do a French press, you sonicate them, you rupture them with whatever your favorite mechanism is, you never see that. Right? So every hot dog you cook will split lengthwise. Every bacteria you kick the hell out of will split exactly the opposite way. It will always split circumferentially. So this has been known back to the 1980s. Verver, this is a sonicated fragment. BB this year. Hayhurst in a different bacterial system. This is sort of blown up a little bit, but you can see they're all sort of chopped across. Okay. And why is this? Now, this isn't quite growth, but it's clearly different. Okay. So, and I'm going to come back to the growth, but let me just orient. So the idea is that if you make a crack this way and you fill in the material, you patch it, and you keep doing that over and over again, this thing's going to get fatter. But the idea is that if you make a crack the other way and fill in the material, it'll get longer. That's the basic idea. So if you can get the crack to go around and fill in the material, you can have a mechanism for bacteria to grow longer. And the question is, how do you get the crack doing that? And the bacteria are doing it, at least under non-normal conditions. The bacteria are under sonication and things, the bacteria are splitting the right way. Okay. So why are they doing that? So we want to understand why. And one clue to it is that the bacterial cyclus is an anisotropic mesh. As this was shown, I think one of the earliest demonstrations was Terry Beveridge with Manfred Jericho and David Pink. Manfred's at Dalhousie. And they laid down the sacculi on a grid work and pushed on it with AFM, and they found a twofold anisotropy depending on how they laid the bacteria down on the grid work. And so there's an elastic anisotropic system in this mesh. So we have an anisotropic elastic system because it's loaded with a twofold anisotropy, and there's a twofold anisotropy in the elastic constants. And so now you can ask a question of, well, can we understand if you had a small crack or gap on the surface of a bacteria, how would it propagate? So here's the green bacteria. Here's the L by L is just our computational box. We're focusing on a small, thin crack on the bacterial surface of length L, oriented at a certain angle to the circumferential, and imagining a propagation at an angle theta with respect to that. Okay, so you take your bacterial surface, you imagine a gap on it, and you say, which way is it going to go? Is it going to go straight, in which case theta 0, or is it going to be curved away? And we're loading that system with this twofold asymmetry. We're loading it twice as much in the T1 as in the T2. But it's not quite so simple because the crack is inclined. So this is the technique. The technique is basically linear elasticity. We have the strain tensor from displacements that's related to the stress tensor through the elasticity. And the thing that makes it a little bit complicated is you have to put the appropriate boundary conditions on and the appropriate zero traction boundary conditions along the crack. So you solve it all, and then you can look for where on the crack is the stress distribution along the surface of this crack, and you can compare it to a material strength. And you can see which way it would propagate. Okay. What do we got? So the material strength is this toughness ratio, and this corresponds to, let's say, a breaking strength of the peptide direction versus the glycan direction. So a higher kappa means that the circumferential bonds are that much stronger. Okay. So what we find is if we take a gap inclined at a certain angle, so zero is circumferential, that's where we want it. If we have the circumferential bond strong enough, the gap will propagate along in that direction. That's a stable. And if they're weak enough, it will propagate the way the hot dog does at 90 degrees. And in between, there's a bistable region where it could propagate either way. And so this was exciting to us because, okay, we recovered the hot dog and we recovered the toughness. You might think that this is sort of to be expected. If you make it tough enough in one direction, you're going to have a crack in that direction. So I think the striking thing isn't that eventually, as the toughness goes to infinity, that you'll get cracks in the right direction, but that it locks into exactly circumferential cracks at a small finite thing. It's not an asymptotic behavior, but it's a threshold of behavior. Okay. So we can redo this for different elastic asymmetry, and 2 is the measured asymmetry for the bacteria, and we find this circumferential stable, which we want, and the axial stable, which we don't want, and in between. Okay. And this is built in by going back to the propane analogy. The propane tank people, when they make tanks that they don't want to blow up, they reinforce them circumferentially. Okay. So you reinforce it enough to cut out the dominant fracture mechanism. Now, in the bacterial studies, you can knock out some of the proteins involved in structure in the cell wall. So I actually showed you a movie of a mutant bacteria, and they had knocked out one of these things, and this little white dot that goes down from the top is showing an axial propagating dot at the same time as you have these circumferential propagating dots. And so what we think is this is some evidence of this bistability, very, very anecdotal evidence, as it were. And so we're quite happy with that. So here's a picture we have. We think that the striking anisotropy, which has been constructed by the bacteria of its sacculus, may be relevant for its growth. It should also be relevant for its fracture characteristics when you sonicate it or French press it or otherwise disrupt it. But it's biology, so it's not done yet. And namely, we're talking about how, basically what I've said is how the anisotropy orients cracks, but I haven't really talked about growth. And there's three questions I have to address. And one is, what about mechanical stability? I mean, if it's growing by a mechanical crack, then you can't turn it off. And it will just fracture under normal growth circumstances. So we want it actually to be stable without growth. And then what mechanisms then do you biological mechanisms do you have to propagate the crack, i.e. degrade the peptidoglycan, and what biological mechanisms do you have to fill in the hole behind the crack, i.e. Peptidoglycan synthesis. So I'm going to deal with these three in turn in the next however many more, 3 minutes, fine, 1 minute each. So the first is, we can look at this actually magnitude of the stress enhancement versus gap length, and there's a characteristic square root of length for a thin crack in an isotropic system, which we recover, and we can fit in sort of a nanonewton characteristic bond strength, and we get about a 300-fold ratio, which is less than that. So basically, mechanical rupture, you're not expecting until this thing is, cracks are longer than a micron. So for very small cracks, mechanical rupture shouldn't be a problem. Okay, what about peptidoglycan degradation? So this idea goes back to the 80s. Ideas are easy. Cox said, well, we should have smart auto license. Proteins which degrade peptidoglycan because of stress. He didn't really have a lot of details, if you were. There's a whole field of mechanoenzymology where, for instance, pulling on proteins allow binding or allow cleavage through proteolysis. So there's some proof of principle examples of this sort of thing. And the proteins involved in bacteria which are degrading the peptidoglycan have only been discovered last year. So this is sort of a big area, and so hopefully there's going to be some mechanoenzymology in the peptidoglycan hydrolases. Third question is, how might stress couple to the synthesis? And the important thing to realize is that the synthesis is at least partially coordinated from the outer membrane. So there's a double wall in gram-negative bacteria, and there's proteins hanging on the outer wall which are related to peptidoglycan synthesis. And so if you have a big enough gap, you can herniate the inner wall, which could modulate the activity of those outer wall enzymes. And also there's an idea of if you change the local packing, you can change the accessibility of the proteins to those outer wall enzymes. So I'll just finish. Oriented growth with local disorder implies that you have to have some sort of non-local mechanism, but that disorder also implies that you have to have the gaps and people observe them. You have to have stress concentration, and that stress concentration with anisotropy can lead to these axial state propagating cracks and can explain both circumferential fracture and perhaps growth as well.